What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 90. Super special episode, man. On the March to 100. But we got special guests. They're not really special because they're part of the original cast. So before we get into that, let me let you know, I'm your host, Day. This is Get Out the Room. This is a horror pop culture podcast. We basically talk about whatever the hell we want, whenever we want. Because that every other week foolishness, we don't really abide by that. But as I said, I'm your host, Dave, but I also got my man Scott with me, as pretty much always.
What's going on?
And we'll start with a special guest returning host, the greatest American hero, Tone. What's going on, brother?
Yo, yo, yo. Believe it or not, baby. I'm back.
We gotta believe it now. What were you saying? You're here. Last but certainly not least, the stat man, the effects man, dead of the year, Crazy Carl from Connecticut. Welcome back, man.
Hey. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, man. It's a special show. You know, it's one that you talked about pretty early, even before this shit became a movie. So we figured it was fitting. You know, you and Tone were carrying the flag for this one pretty early on.
Oh, absolutely. I'll run this motherfucker up the hill like Iwo Jima.
people questioning my whiteness. I was pushing it so hard.
Look, this shit has... Before we get any further, let y'all know, we are going to talk about Black Panther today. The movie's been out for roughly 2 weeks, so it's probably going to be a whole bunch of spoilers while we get into that as well. You should have already seen it once, probably on your way to time number two.
Wait, hold on. Speaking of that, has anybody here seen it twice?
I've seen it 1.5 times.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good.
That was all today.
I love it.
No, just once for me. Just once for me. I mean, if you don't count all the like screen caps and video captures on blogs and pod other stuff, like once. Okay. Once right. That I paid for. One legitimately.
Yeah, my second set of tickets is on Friday. My wife and I are going Friday during the day.
Oh, okay. I'm seriously considering taking the kid to go see it, though. I might have to fly
into town. I caught it the second time yesterday.
It's better.
It's better the second time.
That's what I heard.
Oh, I bet.
That's what I heard. So, yeah. Let's just set it up, man. So, Marvel got early Christmas present or late Christmas present, however you want to put it, in the Ryan Coogler and Chadwick Boseman Black Panther. This shit is expected to cross $1 billion in like the next week and a half. And it is everything that we will have expected from the King of Wakanda.
Mm-hmm.
It was... You know, one of the things that has come up pretty much recently is whether or not it's better than Winter Soldier. And when it first came out, I think a lot of people said that it wasn't. As the second viewings happened, people started to change a little bit.
Man, you jumped into this quick.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I've seen it twice now. I'm going to say this. After my first viewing, I was down for it being one of the better Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. After seeing it twice, it's better than that. However, I'm not ready to give it the crown yet.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going top 3-4. Before it was maybe top 5-6.
Mm-hmm.
Winter Soldier's, in my opinion, still the best one. And I have a special place in my heart for the original Avengers as well. Other than that, it's going to be hard to argue for anything else. Before, I was maybe going Civil War and Iron Man as well, the first Iron Man. I do think that this origin story is a little tighter than Iron Man's. And the story is definitely holds up better than Civil War. Civil War is more the spectacle, which is still a blast to watch. But this movie has the spectacle in addition to the story to back it up. And It's got a confidence about it that not many other movies, superhero movies, have, and that's kind of what sets it apart.
Now, quick question for you, Scott. When you're ranking it the way you're ranking it, are you saying all Marvel movies? Like, are you including the Raimi Spider-Mans? Or
so
current
I'm trying
MCU?
To keep it to the MCU. So
I
like personal favorite comic book movies. The ones that I would still put as my favorites are Winter Soldier and the Avengers from the MCU. But I also really liked the second X-Men movie and The Dark Knight. Other than that, I'm ready to talk movies like Black Panther. Logan from last year, I really liked.
That was a great flick.
Let's see. The original Iron Man's in the group there. I really liked X-Men Days of Future Past.
I don't think that movie is on the same level. I think that's a step below.
Civil War. And that's fine. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
That's just personal preference. That's my opinion. I really like that movie. But I'm an X-Men head, so one of the things I really liked about Black Panther, though, is he's one of the characters that I didn't really know a lot about going into the movie. So I'm a pretty big Marvel comic fan, but there are certain characters like Doctor Strange. When I watched that movie, I didn't know shit about Doctor Strange, and I watched it, and it was okay. You know, I didn't dislike it, but I didn't love it.
You also didn't find out that much about him.
Correct. And then this one, I left going. I mean. Black Panther, man, that dude is, I mean, that's fucking Batman.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah.
This dude.
And they don't even really get into how Batman he is in the movie. I hope they delve deeper into
his
mindset and the things that the way he thinks, because I think it would definitely be expository as to why he is the way he is and what he does.
I don't know if we're going to get that. Carl, you want to give us a little background on Black Panther? At least some of the old school comic book background history.
Well, I'm sure you're gonna love the fact that he was created by two white Jewish guys.
So was Superman. It's all good.
Correct. Yeah. Different Jewish guys. Not the same. Jack Kirby and Stan Lee created Black Panther mainly because there weren't really any black superheroes, and they were just like, well, this needs to change. their first appearance was in Fantastic Four. I didn't research the numbers. I know it's in the 50s.
Okay.
Not the year, the numbers.
Yeah. The number.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
And then he was in Jungle Action, where he actually fights the Klan in one issue.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, the cover is fantastic. He's got like one Klan member in a headlock, and he's like front kicking another one in the face.
That's great.
That's what you do with the Klan. I like that. You punch Nazis in the face and kick Klan members.
Also, I believe in that issue, in those issues, because there was a couple, I think it was like 12 issues of that before his own title started. He battles Eric Killmonger,
who is a very different person.
Yes, Eric Killmonger was not half American.
No, he's all Wakandan.
He was all Wakandan. His origin was still tied in with Claw, though. Claw does what he does. He steals vibranium to make. I'm not sure if he actually made his arm that time or not, but he was stealing vibranium.
Now, and is his arm in the comics vibranium too, or powered vibranium powered?
No.
Okay.
His arm is vibranium, but it looks like a dish. It looks like a satellite dish.
It's like a sonic. It's like a sonic blaster.
Right.
Well, yeah. But Claw is also different because he turns into pure sonic.
Right.
Waves.
Claw somehow turns himself into solidified sound.
Yeah.
So the equivalent of what he fires out of his arm is like him spitting at you, because it's actually part of him or something or south. But we won't get into that.
Yeah,
anyways,
we're gonna do that. That's nasty.
Claw was doing what he was doing, stealing vibranium, and Killmonger's father was helping him. And it was found out, and they were exiled from Wakanda, and they went to California because that's where you go. And
don't I know it?
don't get them fools coming after us.
Cut that. But then it pretty much went the way it went. He went to MIT, this, that, and the other thing. He didn't become a mercenary yet, and kill hundreds and hundreds of people. But his whole thing was wanting to get back into Wakanda because I believe his father was killed from the incident with helping Claw. And to jump ahead, they kind of – all right, spoiler. We're doing spoilers, right?
Yeah, no, we're getting all into this shit.
Okay. At the very, very end, and yes, people are still stupid, and when the credits started to roll, half the audience I was sitting with got up and left.
Yeah, it's fucking dumb.
And then after the first little blurb in between the credits, the other half left. And I'm like, there's two of you morons.
Yeah.
The second little blurb at the end of the movie was seeing Bucky in Wakanda with a beard and a top knot. But let's not go there either. top knot needs to die. If you're not Japanese, you do not wear a top knot. Anyways.
With it. Write the petition. I'll sign it.
Strong statement on your ID.
The kids there call him White Wolf.
Correct.
That is a whole nother huge thing with Black Panther and Wakanda. And what they kind of did in this Black Panther movie is they took Eric Killmonger and they took White Wolf and they kind of combined them a little bit for this storyline.
Okay.
Now, we're not really told anything about White Wolf. It's just mentioned at the end. White Wolf was the king's adopted white son. And I think the main reason they kind of shied away from this but still took the storyline is because you'd have white versus black, literally. A plane crash that crashes into Wakanda. Only survivor is the white son of the pilot and his wife. He is adopted and raised as his child, the king's child, in Wakanda. Then the king has his own child, his own son, T'Challa. So, even though he's not really treated any differently, he now knows he'll never be the king of Wakanda. So there's some hatred there because he is older. But what he does do in the comics and whatnot is he becomes like the best soldier Wakanda has ever seen. And in the comics, he like is the head of the Wakanda elite special forces team, and they are all dressed in solid white Panther suits, and he is the head of it, and called White Wolf.
Okay.
And throughout his storyline, he helps, he doesn't help. Black Panther actually disbands them because he finds out actually how violent they are against their own people. Not like they're not serving justice, but they're like going above and beyond.
Yeah.
Like killing litterers, but that's just an example. That's not what actually happens. But they're that bad. They are judge, jury, and executioner when they really shouldn't be. So he disbands them, and they all leave and become mercenaries. Sound familiar? And then he makes his way back and tries to take the throne from him.
All right.
And so it's like they took the two, they took White Wolf and they took Killmonger and they combined them for the storyline. So I don't know if we're actually ever going to see a White Wolf.
No, we're not going to see that, and that's fine. You know,
they're just giving him the shout out at the end.
That's all you need.
They'll allude to it in that regard. I wouldn't be shocked. Keep in mind that Bucky is a super duper duper spy. So I wouldn't be shocked if some of that comes into play. They're clearly going to try to blend these two characters together. So I wouldn't be shocked if you see Bucky play a role in the security apparatus of Wakanda. I mean, they're not going to go that far with it.
I don't know if that's just even, we're not going to have time for that, because next up is Infinity War, and Thanos is black folks going to come through. So, you know, Wakanda is going to be on the front line of protecting the world. But before we get to that, let's get into this movie. The fact that you had, the hell was that?
Somebody coughed.
Sorry, I still have remnants of the flu.
But going back to the movie, I would just like to say that what they did in the first minute and a half of that film would save so much time in all these other movies. It was done so perfectly. It caught you up so quick.
Yes.
It was everything you needed to know and no bullshit filler. And boom, here you go, the start of the movie.
And they did that to a lesser extent with the very first Thor movie when they started up that Asgardian and Nine Realms bullshit. Yeah. Except they did it more long-winded in Thor, whereas this one was more quick and to the point.
No,
well, it's one of the things. Go ahead, Damon.
No, I just wanted to say, like, you know, with this particular cast, and this cast is absolutely incredible, I want to make sure that we recognize and kind of call out everybody pretty much, you know, immediately with not just Michael B. Jordan as Eric Killmonger, but Lupita Nyong'o as Nakia, Denai Gurira as Okoye, who was
absolutely
probably, you know, she's fucking badass, dude. Look, badass.
We all knew she was dope as
Michonne
in The Walking Dead, but Okoye will whoop Michonne's ass. And this is so
no,
good.
No question. No question.
This is absolutely so good. Forest Whitaker as Zuri. Daniel Kaluuya, last year's breakout star from Get Out. Kid I've been watching for about almost 10, 12 years now. As Wakabi.
Sterling K. Brown for the win.
Look,
and I did not see his role coming. I've been saying for Sterling since that old FX show he had on called Starve that nobody ever remembers. It came out the same year as Always Sunny. I hated Always Sunny. I love Starve. Starve didn't get picked up. But he was fucking magnificent in that. He played exercise anorexia.
He's good all the time, kid. He's one of these dudes that regardless of what he does, he's always good.
It was one of those things. So when I saw it with Erica, she didn't, you know, she just went in, just wanted to see it. We like going to catch all the new Marvel flicks. And the beginning of the movie starts up and, you know, we watched This Is Us. So she saw that and she's just like, oh my God, Sterling K. Brown's in this? That's great. And then at the end, she loves Sebastian Stan too. So that was like another, holy crap, Sebastian Stan's in this too? That's great.
This was like a who's who. Like, this was a legit, this is honestly the most solid cast I've seen in a Marvel flick. Like, this cast was straight up solid.
This cast was crazy. Yep. But we're not done yet. We got Angela Bassett as Queen Mother. One of two.
Looking like Storm.
Looking incredible.
Oh, yeah.
One of two breakout roles.
Storm, fuck, man.
How old is that woman? Because she is still drop-dead gorgeous.
Yes, I don't care how old she is.
Good Lord, she's fine. Listen to this, though. Out of this entire movie, you had two stars who were probably, they had the least amount of lines. You had Winston Duke.
Yeah.
As M'Baku.
Yep.
And you have Letitia Wright as Shuri, T'Challa's sister.
Right. Who has her own, you know, story to come up. You know, I would watch out for Shuri, y'all, because this is not the end of her story.
She
does in the comics take up the mantle as the Black Panther.
Right.
Yep.
Right, and that's great. I love that. I think it's fantastic. One of the things that I also want to recognize is Andy Serkis, who is the, you know, motion capture god. Like, there's literally nobody as good as him, is having so much fun as you listen to him. He is hamming it up.
He really is, dude.
He was great in this.
He was great in this.
Yeah,
and also, like, I can't. Like, okay, so just looking, this is a weird little comment, but like looking at his body type, it kind of blows me away that he was so good as Smeagol.
Yeah.
Like, he's a big dude.
But he wasn't a big dude.
I assume he buffed up a little
He's got easily 40 pounds of muscle on him from when he was playing Gollum.
Up a little bit.
Holy shit. shit, do you know how hard it is to put on 40 pounds of muscle?
But it's good for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, Dr. Feelgood is a real thing in Hollywood, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I just wanted to point out, like, he's just, he's so good in this, and he's so different than anything we've seen him in before. Like, Andy Serkis is really that dude. He really is.
Yep.
I just loved the, why'd you let him start to run away? And spread out the crime scene. The way they think it's an amateur.
It's great. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
Shit and all that, you haven't even mentioned Martin Freeman basically being the newer Phil Coulson.
That's kind of he's like definitely Agent Shield Coulson. Guy. He's definitely Agent Coulson. And he's great. And Martin Freeman, you know, who's an incredibly talented actor. I think most people at this point will either know him as Bilbo Baggins or Sherlock's
Watson.
Oh, Watson. Yep.
Yeah, he's Dr. John Watson. And he's great as Watson. To, you know, he allows Benedict Cumberbatch to do all the things that Cumberbatch can do in any type of show and still manage to get his things off. He's great in a role. And in this movie where you literally have two white dudes, and there's one other Asian lady in Korea who has a speaking part. This is the single blackest cast of all time. Ryan Coogler is a kid who's straight out of Oakland. If you've ever listened to him talk, he does not code switch at all. He talks like he is one of the homies straight from the hood, you know, out of Oakland, which is absolutely incredible to me. You know, not that he's a black kid that can do this well as a director, but it's incredible to me that he has never needed to code switch. I just find that so fucking refreshing.
I mean, dude, his last two movies have been, I mean, blockbusters, and they've been great.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be good. I mean, he doesn't have to. But the point being is he's himself, and it's fucking paying off, and that's awesome.
Yep. Yep, it's fantastic. I absolutely love it, and you know, I love, they said even behind the camera, the cast that was helping people out, they were even of color, and there was a ton of women. And they were like, the women involved here, but just behind the scenes. They said even the women who were involved, they weren't just involved because they needed black women. They were involved because they were really talented at what they did. And this level of, you know, any type of recognition that this film gets cannot be said, like, you know, minimally enough to big up the fact that this is the single most inclusive film in front of and behind the camera of all time for a film that's going to gross $1 billion. $1 billion. This shit is a worldwide blockbuster. They keep telling people that black people aren't Marvel. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, no, this was a real moment for the culture because there was a lot of speculation about how well this movie would do because typically movies with predominantly black casts don't do well overseas. And in particular with the way that the Chinese market is sort of absorbing most of the foreign market, they especially don't really care for that. But this just turned all that on its head. I mean, $1 billion film already. Like, this is a legit game changer, and what it does is it takes every excuse out of the studio's mouths for featuring more black actors, black directors, black stories, because there's no more excuses.
Yep. Yeah, this movie, you know, the thing about it, and this is probably the most understated part of the entire thing, the thing that gets lost in a lot of this is Chadwick Boseman's portrayal of T'Challa is understated. It is
absolutely
the epitome of, you know, speak softly but carry a big stick. You know, dude, he is dope.
But you know what? He didn't have to. That's what made this movie so good, though.
Right.
He didn't even have to be any more than what he did. And, I mean, I off the top of my head, I'm trying to think my favorite characters. I would probably go the Okoye. Killmonger, Claw, and then Black Panther. I mean, I'm like, and he was the star of the damn movie. He still was badass, but he didn't have to do super heavy listening because of how great the cast was, because of how great the story was. He had to do his own thing, and it worked out the way it did.
Yeah, I got to second you on that. He definitely wasn't my not that he did a bad job. He didn't. But he definitely wasn't my favorite character. He didn't steal the show. I will say this in regard to his characterization of Black Panther. T'Challa's much more of a dick in the comics than he is in this movie. Like, I feel like he played him a little nice. You know, he played him a little nice.
Well, T'Challa is a little bit more short of himself in the comics. I think we're catching him, and keep in mind, this happens literally right after Civil War. Right after Civil War happens, because we pick up right when they're about to announce T'Challa as king. Word. So when we have the waterfall scene where M'Baku steps up from the Jabari tribe, who are the mountain people, and he challenges for the throne. The first time you see this entire spectacle of all the Wakandans in the waterfall, this is a masterful, beautiful shot. Man, I cannot tell you. I was a little bit taken aback by, A, just how beautiful and breathtaking and detail-oriented the entire scene was, which I would later come to find out is the entire movie in general. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, every aspect of the film is so incredibly well detail-oriented, crafted. They didn't miss anything. Ryan Coogler missed nothing. Everything about this film is beautiful and dope. And then when you actually look at the scenes, you're having a great fucking time, man. And Winston Duke is a kid. I think he's from Trinidad and Tobago, I believe. But I could be wrong.
No, you're right. Okay. Trinidadian.
Yeah, he was. He's become Lady 6'6", a gigantic dude. But he brought this really. He didn't have he didn't have a ton of lines, but every time he spoke, he was great as M'Baku. And
he was honestly my biggest worry, because I was just petrified about, because that's Manape.
Yes.
About what, they can't have a brother come out wearing a gorilla costume.
Yeah.
People are gonna lose their fucking minds.
You're absolutely right.
And it's going to be everywhere, and Marvel's going to take a hit for it. DC's going to take it, or Disney's going to take a huge hit for it. How are they going to pull this the fuck off? And they did it perfectly.
Yeah, that mask. Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, that's just credit to good direction. You know, Ryan Coogler really, like, you can tell, like, he understands the subject matter. Like, he did some reading. He did some thinking. And, you know, you can't really remove Manape from the equation, because he is actually a very important part of the Black Panther story, of the mythos. But you obviously can't have, like you said, you can't have a brother walk around, a 6'6" brother walk around in a damn white ape suit. Like, you just can't do that. It's 2018. Fuck out of here. And Ryan Coogler figured out a way to make it work, and make it work in a way that it still had integrity with the storyline. That's just talent and forethought, and it's super impressive. And I don't even know why. You know, actually, the thing that is actually even more surprising is that after watching Fruitvale Station and watching Creed and watching what this man could do, he still managed to surprise me.
Yeah,
like, that's how good this film was. Nobody thought this was going to be a bad film. This has been one of the most hyped films for years, and it still delivered. That is impressive.
Not just deliver, it over delivered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a film where, and this is true of kind of the better Marvel films, you don't have to know shit about the Marvel Cinematic Universe to watch this film feel like you're watching just a quality film. It happens to have a couple of superheroes in it. That's
absolutely
it.
Yep.
Right. This movie could have came out from Warner Brothers called Wakanda Forever.
Yeah.
And it still would have been this popular and made the money, because literally this doesn't need to be a superhero Marvel movie.
I agree.
This could have just been released by anybody, and this quality, and it gave you everything you needed to know. Period.
But I mean, isn't that kind of that's a testament?
Any of the other movies?
Well, that's a testament to Marvel has made. I mean, for the most part, I mean, what are they through now? This is the 18th movie, something like that. And they're still, and now they've made a movie that doesn't have to tie into it, and it's the 18th fucking movie? Like, what?
DC, I mean, that's kind of a fucking clue.
I know, man. Yo, for real, like, shout out to Marvel, man. Like, it's insane
that they've been able to maintain this strength. This is a perfect segue to just, like, I'm going to make this little comment. This is how bad Warner Brothers is fucking up.
Yeah.
I just read they cast Kristen Wiig to play Cheetah in the Wonder Woman sequel.
What in the? No, they did.
Yes, they did. I'm reading it right now. Yes. That's Kristen Wiig? Yes.
They cast Kristen Twig.
Dude, I almost just laughed when you guys were talking before. Yes. Yeah, dude.
Do they have her on a squat machine right now? Like, has she just been squatting for the last year?
That's a swing and a miss. Swing and a miss.
Hey, but you know what, though? Look, I talked all the shit in the world about Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, and she still is not physically my Wonder Woman. That being said, in characterization alone,
yeah, she played the part really well. I agree. Sorry to interject. I just wanted to say, like, it's funny we're talking about how great Marvel is and how Warner Brothers needs to pay attention. I mean, Kristen Wiig as a Wonder Woman villain is just kind of funny.
Yeah, but then again, she probably built the same as Wonder Woman in that movie. So I mean, hey.
Yeah.
I want to start seeing people do the arm cross over their chest too.
That's already happened.
Is it?
Check it out. So I'm coming out of the outlets, and I got my wife's bags, I got the kids' tennis shoes, and I'm holding two coffees. And an older black lady walks by me, and she gave me the Wakanda Forever. I was like, oh shit. Like, I spilled a little bit of the coffee to make sure I got the cross so she saw it. Like,
what?
Yeah.
Dude, like, put you on speakerphone and repeat and have you repeat what you was just holding so that she can understand. You were holding what now?
I had
two bags.
I had my lady's bag. So, cool. Kids got shoes. Each one got a new pair. Plus, I had just gone to get us coffee, and I'm holding all this shit while the kids are at the playground. She's with them, and all three of our cell phones for whatever reason. And this older black lady saw me, and she crossed on. She hit me with the Wakanda Forever, brother. And I was like, oh shit, holy shit, like, it's really happening. This shit is real in the streets. And I spilled a little bit of the coffee so I could give her the Wakanda Forever back. But that shit was important, man. That shit was real. It was crazy to, like, see somebody come out, you know, that you don't know. You know, she don't even know if I saw the movie or not. But she assumed correctly that I had. And, like, that's the new heads up now. The Wakanda Forever in the streets. I thought that shit was incredible. I thought that shit was really, great. Really impressive. And I think, to a large extent, that's a really big kind of head nod to just how much this film means to black folks. Like, as a community film, it's not just a film. This is a fucking movement. This is like our new universal thing to be hailed. And yeah, of course, we'll have a wrinkle in time. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of other shit. And they're like, ooh, y'all going to go support Ava DuVernay? Okay, we get it. I got you. But right now, Black Panther as a film has spoken to black folks in a way that no other film has. The amount of vision that Ryan Coogler had, the amount of visibility that they managed to get from all pieces, walks, and parts of African culture to not show up as other, to not show up as, you know, weird or strange or out there, but as part of everyday normal African society. You know what I mean? Like, the country that has never been colonized. So there's literally no reason for any of the things that we see to be different. I thought that shit was very, very cool.
That's cool. That is cool.
Like, Scott, for you, I'm sure it was a little different. Like, it was very cool, but I'm sure it didn't speak to you the same way.
I can agree to that. I mean, I can notice that it has that quality about it, though.
Right.
That was something that to me kind of set it apart. It had that, I don't know. It had that quality about it that was just there was a confidence there that is hard to,
I don't know. It's hard to describe almost. I haven't seen a movie like that before. You know, I mean, Iron Man didn't do that shit.
No.
So it's just a, I don't know. I think it's a credit to the cast, the actors, the story, it's just the direction, all of it. It just had a good, it had a good message. I mean, I think one of my favorite scenes is that scene at the end when that kid goes up to T'Challa and asks him, you know, who are you? And yeah, he just kind of smiles and looks at him. And I'm like, I remember after the movie, I looked at my wife and I just said, I was just like, this right here, like Black Panther is going to be that guy now. I mean, yeah, that's that right there is representative of how, you know, African Americans and just I think Black kids in general are going to start seeing superheroes, and that's cool. It's kind of cool.
You know, representation matters, man. Being able to see yourself on, you know, in like a really positive light changes the way that you view yourself and your future. I think for a large extent, there are kids who believe that they can do or be anything they want to be when they kind of move through this life, but to literally see it, to literally sit down and see Black folks, real brown folks as superheroes, as strong independent women, as royalty, as having culture, as having tradition, as having all these different things that, you know, no other movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has. Like Thor, to a large extent, yeah, they had a couple of things, but they didn't really lean on it as much. And to see that played out with Black Panther was really, really crazy. You know, shout out to Chadwick Boseman, again, who held down his shit so well, man.
Oh yeah.
You know, Sterling showing up, showing out as always.
Yep.
You know, he can't do anything but act well. Like,
that's true.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel like I'm late on the party to Sterling K. Brown, because, you know, I know him from
This Is Us.
This Is Us, and yeah, I would argue, and I don't think it's a big argument, that he's the best actor on that show. And it was kind of a pleasant surprise. I think I knew he was in the movie, but I had forgotten that he was, because when the movie opened, it was just kind of a nice little perk, like, ooh, oh yeah, he's in this. All right, cool.
Yeah, and your lady was like, yes, Lord.
Yes, she absolutely loves him too. So that's just a nice little twist.
She said, look at that sexy chocolate man with those ivory white teeth.
Yes.
Yeah, man, but all in all, I thought that his scene, which I didn't even realize he was there for, was crazy. And then how important it was for setting apart the rest of the story. You know what I mean? Like, it set a course for the rest of the story that this is probably the biggest Marvel villain where you could legitimately be on their side.
Yes.
You know, like,
absolutely.
You know, like, even like Baron Zemo, you can almost understand why he was doing what he was doing, but you would never truly agree with it. Michael B. Jordan and Eric Killmonger, yeah, motherfucker, I'm with you. They should have left.
He was really extreme about it, which is why he came off like the villain. I mean, He was just very in your face about it. And I mean, look, that worked for the character and it worked for the movie, but that's kind of why when you go, man, I'm down with what he's saying, but I don't know if, you know, I can be down with this. Cause he was kind of brutal. He was just unforgiving.
Man, there was nothing kind of about it. That motherfucker was brutal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And man, but you know, I mean, he had those lines that were, I mean, it got everybody cheering and got people talking. And I mean, he's a memorable villain. And Marvel, for as good as they are, and for batting 1,000 like they do, they usually don't really hit on the villains. I mean, there's a lot of forgettable villains in their movies.
Hell yeah.
And, I mean, you know, they've got Loki, Winter Soldier, who I consider a villain in The Winter Soldier, was a good villain. And then I liked Michael Keaton's Vulture, and I liked Baron Zemo. But other than that, and I guess Hela was good, too.
I really liked Hela.
But hey, other than that, though, I mean, what other villains do you classify as, you know, good to great, as opposed to, okay,
maybe Loki.
I mean, Loki.
I'm thinking Loki.
Loki's good to great. Like, I don't think that's a problem. But he's kind of made this transition to an anti-hero, where depending on how much he's trying to save his own ass, this motherfucker, he on a good side. He calling Thor, but then trying to double cross Thor. Like, he's all over the place, man. But, you know,
word.
Loki's great. He's Mephisto Jr. Like, I love that about him.
Oh, that's an insult, but you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I mean, I couldn't say anything different. You know, Tone, for you, the feeling you got when you watched this film, you know, what was the difference, man, between the other films?
Well, you know, representation matters. And to your point of representation, like, I remember just after Obama got elected, I was in Rockland, California, going to In-N-Out. Now, Rockland is like, or, you know, that's where the artsy fartsy folks who live, you know, that's where, like, that's the rich section of Sacramento, California, which is kind of a rich section of California.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I walked in there, and I remember the little the clerk was like, oh, okay, sir, like, what can I do for you, sir? Like, it was the first time I got hit with the sirs, and it might be because I wasn't in my mid-30s at that point, although I hadn't got hit with those sirs quite so heavily or whatnot. But I remember, you know, my wife at the time, Myrna, was like, that's that Obama. Like, she saw you, you know, home dude saw you in your slacks and your shirt, and, you know, he hit you with that sir and whatnot. And I laughed it off at the time, but I remember traveling abroad shortly after that. And the difference, I mean, you know, y'all know me, like, I be traveling and shit. I've traveled all up and down this world. And there's always a little bit of an American boost you get when you're overseas. But the difference in respect was palpable. Like, I felt how differently folks saw me after having seen a Black American president.
Yeah.
And that's some real shit that's gonna come from Black Panther, and I'm all for it. Like, I got a kid, she's 19 years old. In her life, she's got, you know, Barack Obama, she's got Michelle Obama, she's got a Black superhero. Like, people think that this is a little thing, but this shit really does matter. It changes the way people see themselves, and not only that, more importantly, it changes the way other folks see you.
Correct.
So, like, there's some real actual social change that's going to come from this. I know it probably sounds like I'm overselling this shit, but I'm really not. You know, when a Black American, when an African American cast, all Black,
yep,
stars, directors, writers, etc., sell out a Billy in a week.
Yeah.
Some real fucking social change is going to come from that.
Right.
You can best believe that shit. Like, I remember having to pretend that Spider-Man was Black underneath his mask.
Yep.
'Cause he just seemed like a Black dude, but when he put the mask on, I could be like, "Yeah, that's my nigga right there." You don't have to pretend no more. I don't have to scale Peter Parker up to, like, you know, to Pietro, whatever. You know, like, I ain't gotta pretend he's Black. Like, I got a real superhero on the big screen doing real big shit. That fucking matters, man. It really does.
It does matter. It changes. Yep. It changes the way folks see themselves. You know, I think there are a lot of folks who, like, Black folks are doing too much. All this African garb, all this other shit.
No.
Like, no.
Absolutely
no.
Not.
Like, this is the first time you had somebody that represented a cultural fit and a cultural look. That,
you know, most of the people who are complaining about that, though, it actually took me a little more time to catch it, because I had heard people saying that they had read that there was a lot of misunderstanding. And at first when I heard that, I was just like, you know, I haven't been hearing a lot of that. But when I started hearing it, it's people who simply don't know the context. When
right.
An ignorant person hears the name Black Panther, they automatically go to that reverse racism shit. And that's absurd, but you know what I'm saying. That's
no,
that's
no, where I completely understand.
Because they're taking it out of context. They just hear Black Panther and go, "Well, why can't we just call him Panther or White Panther or we can't do this?" And I'm like, "Now wait a minute, Black Panther is a character that's been around. You know, he's a classic Marvel comic book character. I mean, he was created at the height of when all of these Avengers characters were coming out. So that, you know." With a little context, all you have to do is just look into it a little bit. I mean, he was created.
And not only that, but you know, he's the chieftain of the Panther tribe in Wakanda, and like the Black Panther, that's an actual animal. Like, we didn't just make that shit up. Like, there is a Black Panther. You know what I mean? Like, that's a real fucking thing. So, you know, all that other shit is bullshit.
Yeah, no, it means a lot. You know, I think some of the celestial scenes where T'Challa, you know, goes and visits his father, and the way that those things are shot, and the fact that every single ancestor that he sees is a collection of real Black Panthers. That shit is pretty fucking dope to me, man. I thought that was like a really tough little way to do it.
Now, can we talk about the thematic imagery of the fact that, you know, the Black Panther is the Black Panther, right? And when Killmonger takes over, he has a jaguar costume. Now, genetically speaking, there is no difference between a jaguar and a panther. The only difference is pigment.
Right.
Like, jaguars exist in South America. Black Panthers exist in Africa. All it is pigment. And when you think about the difference between Killmonger as an African American and T'Challa as a straight African, there's some real deep fucking symbolism going on right there that I don't think anybody's really touched.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No, absolutely.
It's real shit.
Yeah, that motherfucker's a physical manifestation of the way the African Americans feel. Well, not even African Americans, but African Americans in a turmoil that exists between Africans and African Americans. You know, the idea that we were left, the idea that you never came to get us, the idea that you had all this culture, all this history, and never gave a fuck to try and share with us until hundreds of years later, and then you look down on us for not having it the same way. That shit is real, man. Like, oh, so fuck that. We coming back, we gonna burn all your shit because you didn't give a shit about us. You put us on these boats and never came to get us.
And that's something that I think, you know, this is something that's been talked about in a lot of think pieces, but I don't really feel like they talked about it well. You know, that schism between African Americans and Africans, so to speak. And the idea that you can't quite be African if you're African American, and also the idea that Africans, when they immigrate to America, aren't quite black, like that ridiculous schism that we got going on. This movie deals with a lot of that.
It does.
And it's important for the culture. You know what I'm saying?
Uppercase black and lowercase black. You never be
big. Hey, I don't want to go there, but for real, like that's the real deal.
You'll never be uppercase black. You'll always be lowercase black, dog.
For real. For real. That's some real shit.
Like, African culture, when folks come from the continent and they come to this country, they generally, you know, they take pride in where they came from, and they don't want to lose that identity, which I think is fantastic. But how many of us know which fucking country we actually come from on a continent?
Exactly.
We don't. So this is us, motherfucker. This is what it is. You can't then come back and be like, hey, how come you don't know where you're from? Motherfucker, you know why we don't know where we're from. Fuck out of here.
And not only that, but one of the criticisms that I've heard in this movie is that the accents are all over the place. Some of them are Xhosa, some of them are South African, some of them are Nigerian, and different actors took a different approach to that. In particular, the dude who plays Jabari, he specifically took a Nigerian accent because he felt like the character that he was playing was more culturally Nigerian than anything else. And
Winston
then Chadwick Boseman.
Winston
yes,
Duke?
Winston Duke.
Yeah,
and
M'Baku.
Chadwick Boseman, you know, he made a choice to make his accent South African.
Yep.
And a lot of folks have like complained that the accents are all over the place. And sure, from a story thematic perspective, it doesn't make sense that this, you know, Wakanda that, you know, has been isolated culturally and socially and even financially, would have different accents amongst the different tribes. That doesn't make sense for them.
But
for a movie, like, before an American movie, it totally makes sense, because this is really a celebration of our African roots in a lot of different ways. So it makes total sense to have all these different accents and all these different pieces of different cultures being pulled in, because that's really what it is, because we really are a hodgepodge. You know, some of us are West Africa. Some of us come from South Africa. Some of us come from East Africa. It's all love.
We talk that shit all the time, but if you go to fucking the Northeast, you go to outside of Boston, there are motherfuckers who have a very different accent than people who in Cranston, Rhode Island have, you know, a super different accent. Or, you know, somebody from where my wife is from, they may not even have what you would call a Rhode Island accent. So places that are within an hour away from each other and their accents differ drastically. So why is it that five different tribes representing five different areas wouldn't have different accents? I got into this shit this weekend with a friend of ours, and I almost lost my shit. And part of that was probably because, you know, she was white and she was saying some shit about my Black Panther. And I probably took that shit a little bit too personally. I can fully admit that to y'all. I took that shit a little too personally. But like, this is our movie. I'm not gonna let you sit up here in my house and like take shots at my movie. Fuck out of here. My bad. Scott, go ahead, man.
Well, I guess it didn't really bother me, because I think they explain it at the beginning of the movie. I just felt that, you know, if five different tribes of people are coming together, I don't know. I assume that there's going to be different dialects, or, you know what I mean? I guess it just didn't bother me. I don't know. That to me seems, you know, it didn't bother me at all. I don't care. I didn't care about all that, because I liked that there were different tribes of people that came together as one. And I mean, even with the Jabari, I liked that they were kind of off on their own and came back kind of by the end, and it just it fit together well. It's just something that, I don't know, it just didn't really bug me like that.
Well, it was also sort of it was a wonderful sort of analogy to America itself, because, you know, if you were to split the country and you had like a southern tribe, a northeastern tribe, a midwestern tribe, a western tribe. Like, if you took brothers from like Cali and New York and Chicago and Atlanta, Texas, you put them motherfuckers in a coalition, they would all sound different too. But the idea that they would all be a little different, be culturally different, sound a little different, look a little different, but still be working together for the same purpose, like, that's some real shit. And that would happen in America too. So I think that's a fabulous point.
Yeah, no, I think so too. It felt like a nitpick, but, you know, besides that, you know, I think there was the fact that, and this was something that I noticed, the stark difference in the way that Michael B. Jordan managed to relate to everything else in the film. You know what I mean? Like, he just had this super African American, like, down to the colloquialisms.
Absolutely.
The way he carried himself was just so starkly different to the way that all of the Wakandans and kind of everybody in the African side of the story carried themselves. It was just so different. You know, the hey auntie, that shit was that shit brought the entire fucking house down, dude.
Yeah. But did you notice that his tone shifted depending on where he was at? Like,
correct.
When he was in that little when he was in the museum,
yeah,
you know, and you know, he had his little glasses on, he was talking to the woman. It was different than when he was in Wakanda, and I felt like that was a really good representation of the difference of how Americans are when we're in our element, how we're seen, I should say, how we're perceived when we're in our element, and how we're perceived when we're overseas. Because that swagger shit and whatnot, is that's very common. One of the things they never talk about when you're overseas, and this is some shit I have some like real experience with, is that, you know, America, like we kind of have like the corner, we corner the market on fucking like manners and shit. Like, even the British, where we got our fucking manners for, are like, oh, Americans, they have like fabulous manners. Like, thank you, please, excuse me, like all that shit. That's American shit. Like, no one does manners and like public interaction the way Americans do. And I felt like that being able to see the way, you know, the way that swagger was portrayed when he was in Wakanda, that, hey, auntie, and is this your king? And like that swagger shit, how they saw him there and how he behaved when he was in America. That was some important shit, too. Like, there was a lot of stuff that they covered in this movie, be it thematically or plot wise or even just like symbolically, that was, you know, undervalued. Like, you could really pick this movie apart. Like, somebody's gonna make their thesis point in their MFA class on this movie right here. Hell, like, there's a lot there.
Hell yeah. And that's just gonna be real. Yep. You know, watching some of these kids, you know, they're gonna be kids out here, you know, they're gonna come back and they're gonna point to the moment when they saw Chadwick Boseman and when they saw this movie and they saw Killmonger. And they saw this, you know, fabulous cast of beautiful women who have gravitas, and they're not just,
oh my God,
you know, they don't just hang on to what the men are talking about. They do, they hold the attention of the screen by themselves.
And you know what? And that's another fabulous point, because one of the things that we talk about in the civil rights movement is how pivotal Black women were to the civil rights movement and how little credit they got for this. And this movie is a very small, but like a, you know, again, a compensation for that fact, because Black women were everywhere and they were large and in charge and they were pivotal in this fucking movie. Man, Denaya in this movie was everything. Like, yo, she became Black Panther at some point, and I've never been to her before, but I am fucking with it. She was everything in this film.
Okoye.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
Dude, she was strong. She was beautiful. She was loyal. Like, that pivotal moment when Black Panther switched from Chadwick to Michael B. Jordan.
Yep.
And Lupita is like, yo, you gotta help us with this revolt. And she was like, I'm loyal to the throne. Fuck, I don't know what you're doing, but what I'm doing right here is I'm being loyal to my king. That was some real fucking shit, man. Yeah. Like, that is the difference between a soldier and a revolutionary right there. And that's another fucking pivotal moment and another fucking theme that we can talk about. That was amazing. Black
folks, that shit was very real. You sat down and said to yourself, wait a minute, hold on. The fuck do you mean? Like, I don't fuck with this dude. You don't fuck with this dude. We about to overthrow. I was like, overthrow? What the fuck are you talking about?
That's my king.
The king lost an accepted battle.
Exactly.
You know, like, he lost. And, you know,
and I might not agree with this shit, but I'm going to fall in line because that is my role. I am the general. That motherfucker is the king. This is what we do.
Shout out to Winston Duke for the shade. It was like, it doesn't sound like murder. Sound like that motherfucker took an L. When they were in the mountains in Jabari, I thought that shit was really fucking incredible. Little pieces of shade.
Especially when you think about like the secession of power. You know, the United States prides itself on our secession of power. We've had a secession of power, you know, systematically all throughout the years. There's never been a coup in the United States. There have been many coups in Africa and whatnot, and that tends to lead Africa to be looked upon as
unstable.
An unstable, lawless region. And these people were like, nah, we got rules.
Yep.
The law.
It's so a wrap.
But it is. That was important for the culture as well. Like, this movie did a lot of work towards, you know, quote unquote, civilizing Black folks in a way that, and it was subtle, you know, because we got to pick this shit apart to find it. It was subtle. But, you know, in my opinion, subtle messages often have more impact than overt messages.
Look, there are a couple moments that were subtle that were fucking mind-blowingly important. I think a lot of people missed. And shout out to Russell Heinlein for being one of the few people who saw this very clearly. The fact that the final fight scene took place on a literal underground railroad.
Word. Yeah. Shout out to Russell. He did it. Shout out to Russell.
Wow.
You missed that.
Yes, absolutely. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. That shit happened on a literal underground railroad.
It sure enough did.
Wow.
That shit is mind blowing now, right?
I can't believe he's the only one that caught that. Like, when I looked at that tweet, I was like, damn, he's right. Couldn't believe he was the only one who caught it. But, you know, shout out to Russell.
Same, you know, Russ do what Russ gonna do. But good word. God. You know, it's this movie's crazy. When you look at Killmonger, Michael B. Jordan, the sexy dude. I don't think that's any question, right?
Oh, we can all acknowledge that,
right?
We've all seen the tweets and the Facebook messages, like, you know, the women love, you know, ladies love Michael B. Jordan.
The wife walking out to the car afterwards, she goes, "Woo, Michael B. Jordan." And I looked over and I looked at her and she goes,
"You gotta give her a pass. You gotta give her a pass."
And she just goes, "What?" I go, "Yeah, you're right."
Look, when that motherfucker came out with his shirt off and they're about to get into the battle, he broke the bottom half of his staff off. I was like, "Oh shit. It's about to get real."
And look, don't get me started on this. Is this your king, man? That was such a fucking Black American moment. This y'all king? Is this y'all king? Nah, this ain't y'all king. That was blacker than the fucking Ace of Spades, man. That was some real shit right there.
That shit was crazy. That shit was absolutely crazy. I've very rarely seen the ability to work in so many, you know, they're not just jokes. They're very pointed and directed moments.
Very pointed, that speak, yes.
You know, it's to the, it go back all the way to like W.E.B. Du Bois, the duality of Black men, being able to do both things.
Uh-huh,
this spoke
the
to,
talk like, about it.
Like, we talked to everybody. Like, you watch that, you're like, oh, that shit's cool. That's your king. But to the other folks, Black Twitter, you know, people who, you know, really about their life, like, that shit spoke to a really particular part of the culture. Like, these motherfuckers literally doing it for the culture. I was like, holy fuck, man.
And, yo, as a, you know, I mean, you know, I got my Midwest roots, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, the vast majority of my life has been in the West Coast. And as, you know, a West Coast / Midwest, like, it was dope to see that representation of Black life. Because so often, Black life is New York or the Dirty South. To see a West Coast representation of this y'all king, for real, like, to see that and, like, recognize it, like, that's another push of the movement. It's like, yo, you know, again, we've been talking about this since like the 50s. Like, we are not a monolith. We are a multitude. We are a legion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But to see that in film and to say, like, to have him center Killmonger.
Yeah, we lost you.
West Coast.
There you go. No, he was decidedly West Coast. I think Ryan Coogler had a lot to do with that. The African diaspora is more than just New York. It's more than just Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, it's literally, it's everywhere. And I think there's something to be said about utilizing every aspect of the diaspora to make a statement here. You know, seeing the tribe with plates in their lips, seeing the tribe that use mud to dye their hair, and to see that as normal, to see it as every day in Wakanda, I thought that shit was fucking incredible. You know, there was a couple things that I know a lot of people didn't necessarily fuck with, and that was your boy Ulysses Claw, the L that he took. Scott, I know you in particular had a little bit of a beef with the way that shit went down.
I don't know. Having seen it twice, I kind of felt like I was jumping in on the nitpicky part, but there was a scene in both times that kind of took me off guard. And the way that Killmonger and Claw kind of just suddenly were at each other's throats after Claw got rescued just didn't really. I don't know. I noticed it both times. Like, man, they are getting at each other's throats really fast, and it just is off to me. Like, if he wanted to use Claw to get back into Wakanda, even if he was dead, then why didn't he just shoot him before? I don't understand why it was just kind of they're having a conversation, and then snap of the fingers, and now they're at each other's throats. And You know, maybe it was just something that I missed. It just, I did notice it both times, and it was just kind of something that kind of, I don't know if there was anything I'm pointing to that I didn't, you know, care for or get right away. That's it right there.
Yeah. Like to me, I felt like that shit was indicative of just how far ahead Killmonger was thinking. It was a situation where like he was thinking, all right, you know, let's just stop through Wakanda. He was like, I'm going to drop you off. I'm going to get in because I brought you in alive. And all the people in Wakanda who remember what you did 30 years ago are going to welcome me because I brought the murderer home. But
right. You know,
but Claw caught wind of that shit. And all of a sudden he's like, well, shit, now I got to fucking change course. Well, fuck it. I'll just kill you. Bring in a body bag. Same thing. I'm still getting in.
Exactly. That was just a masterful pivot on Killmonger's point. And that's a window into the criminal mindset because you're constantly paranoid and you're constantly running the angles. And at that point, Killmonger knew. The minute that fool said Wakanda, Killmonger knew. Claw knew.
Yep.
Yeah. The minute Killmonger said Wakanda, Claw knew what the fuck was going on. He grabbed his girl. He held the gun to the head. It was like, nah, I'm not going out like that. And Killmonger was prepared. He was like, I'm not really feeling this girl that much. We just started fucking like 2 weeks ago. I'm going to shoot her in the heart. I'm going to take you in.
Look, like we talked about before.
That's some cold-blooded shit.
It's cold-blooded shit. But like we talked about before, women are a means to an end. He don't love them.
Yes. Well, everybody is a means to an end for Killmonger. It was, truly. You know, he has a direction of purpose that is rare in most villains.
Which
you know,
is what makes him even better.
Absolutely. We talk about Marvel has an issue with weak villains. And this was not a weak villain. Not only was he not a weak villain, he was a villain with a purpose and with a point of view that was relatable. And so, you know, you could arguably rewrite this whole fucking story and have Killmonger as the hero.
Yep.
He could arguably be a tragic hero.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel like he is already. Scott, I mean, please be the voice of reason. Let us know if we just feeling this shit too much. Jump in. Or if we just kind of see it, but we also see it on a different level.
Absolutely.
No. I think it was just we're still talking about that one scene though, right?
Yes and no. Yeah, go ahead. Continue.
I that was the only one that kind of just I think I took for granted the how volatile you know people like that can be, and right. By that I mean villains in general.
Yeah.
And,
no, but really bright villains too. They lull you into a sense of calm.
Correct. Correct. And so it just, like I said, it's the one thing that stood out to me. Having seen it two times, it still stood out to me the second time of like, man, that maybe it felt maybe something was cut. Maybe it felt like something was, you know, maybe they just decided this was a scene that we were just going to get right to the point because it leads to kind of the finale. I mean, this is kind of what leads into the finale, and it gives a little more weight to a movie that, you know, that scene in particular kills one of the most interesting characters in the movie. And it's kind of weird that a comic book movie, a type of film that unfortunately a lot of the villains, this is at Marvel, DC, anywhere, the villains tend not to be very good as a whole. And we lost one of the film's two best characters, which happened to be villains. So...
Look, I'll tell you straight up and down. The biggest issue with a lot of the things that happen between the villains and the heroes is that the heroes in Marvel are much more multi-layered outside of the metahumans that happen to be in DC. So with that, you have to spend a ton of time building up the multi-dimensional, multi-faceted heroes to even make them relatable and make sense. You know, like, you can't just take Iron Man. It's like, oh, he's a dude in a big-ass suit. No. This motherfucker
He's way more than that.
Yeah, he's a child genius who grew up with a ton of regret and the lack of ability and lack of confidence that he would ever live up to what his father did.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that people don't see with Iron Man is that he is as awesome as he is living in the shadow of his very awesome father. Mm-hmm. So, like, he ain't shit compared to his dad. Like, real talk.
Right.
He can't even make, like, his dad made Captain America's shield. Right. He can't even do that. He don't know how it happened.
Right.
So, like, Iron Man is living in the shadow of a great fucking man.
Look, at the end of Civil War, this motherfucker is talking about the name stays home. They ain't got my daddy blood on it. Like,
for real.
The whole time, yo. No, but like, for you, Scott, like, I know that you felt like Winter Soldier was the best, right? What are the differences in what you see here?
You're talking, okay, are we talking movie or villain?
Villain.
Oh, well, I'm trying to think of, and I guess I'm going for more of the memorable impact. I'm thinking of the threat that they pose to the main characters. I'm thinking of what they represent to the main characters. You know, Loki was raised as Thor's brother, and he has more impact to the hero than, you know, for example, I'm thinking in the Phase One movies, you know, Obadiah Stane was an okay villain because we like Jeff Bridges, but he's ultimately not really mattered after that movie. Actually, he hasn't mattered at all after that movie. Abomination, I thought worked in The Incredible Hulk, but again, he hasn't mattered after that movie. He had no impact other than I'm going after the Hulk.
To the character.
Whereas Loki, correct. Whereas Loki mattered because Thor grew up with this guy. Yeah. And this guy is his brother.
And Emil's dope. Let's be real. Emil Blonsky is a dope character.
Yes. And
I wasn't impressed.
No. Like, don't take what you saw in the movie, but as a character, Emil Blonsky is a very dope character.
Yeah. He's a great actor.
No. I'm not really talking about, like, the movie, but Emil Blonsky as the comic book character and what comes from that.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but go ahead, Scott. Like, Loki definitely has multifaceted impact across multiple shit.
Yes, and Winter Soldier, I think, has that as well. And he was a guy that grew up with Steve Rogers. Steve Rogers, when he realized that it was Bucky, I think it just kind of clicked to him that, oh no, maybe this guy's a little misunderstood. And as it turns out, Winter Soldier's kind of been, he and Loki, I don't think this is a coincidence, are such good characters that they're starting the transition into, you know, Loki as an anti-hero and Winter Soldier really as an Avenger.
Yeah. And possibly taking on a mantle.
Correct. And that's kind of where they're setting it up. Whereas then you got villains like Vulture in Spider-Man Homecoming, where he's just, I think that benefited a lot from just a really kick-ass performance. I mean, Michael Keaton kind of knocked that out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, Keaton, Keaton going to do what he going to do, man. He good all the time.
Yeah, you can't. Yo, can we talk about Keaton, though? Like, Batman to Birdman to Vulture, like, does his agent have, like, a lockdown on wings? People, what's going on?
That's some good shit.
It is, dude, and I've actually heard that. I think that's good. Yeah, I've read an article about that where they were talking about how Michael Keaton plays these winged comic book characters so well.
He really does. I mean, it's just a testament to Keaton. Like, Keaton's good, and Keaton was good in Beetlejuice. Keaton was good in Batman. Keaton was good in Multiplicity. Like, Keaton was good in fucking The Other Guys. Y'all see him in The Other Guys?
He's good in everything.
He was.
He's just good. He's an exemplary of comics with good acting chops. Like, Hollywood really needs to start betting on comics with good acting chops, because when you're a comic, you have to kind of play so many different sides. And if you can get a good comic who acts, you probably got a winning combination right there.
Right. Look, Keaton's good in everything he does, straight up and down, right? I think we all recognize that he's very good at it. The next piece about all of that, and to your point, the thing about the Vulture, though, is that it's a very self-contained story, right? He was a very good guy that got done wrong by the system, which is a very relatable story. You know what I mean? Like, right. The man, like the dude that sits in the chair, the man did him wrong. He tried to do everything the right way, he got done up, and managed to do his shit the other way. I thought that shit was fantastic.
Yes. Well, and then when Trump's
Go ahead, Scott. Go ahead, Scott.
All right, well, so if you're going to keep talking vulture, then you go.
I was going to say, in Trump's America, he is a, you know, he really is an archetype. You know, he's the small business guy who got done
wrong.
And underneath him, like, you know, I saw this recently. You know, leadership isn't about being
smart. So I'm going to go on to we're still talking villains. I'm trying to bring it full circle back to Killmonger.
Yep, keep it going.
So
do it.
If we do, if you keep going down the line of the villains who I think we can agree are good to great villains, I've only hit now on what Loki, Winter Soldier, Vulture, yep. And then I also want to hit on the two that I think are villainous that we can relate to more so than other ones, which is why I think they're better. Okay. One of which is Baron Zemo in Civil War. Yeah. I think we understand that he is, we get why he did what he did. Again, he did it very, very extreme. He took it really, 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 really personally.
Yes,
and hurt a lot of people to do that.
Yes,
but if you really watch that movie, because you know that movie, again, I think I've mentioned before, that movie's more about the spectacle. We want to see the characters, all the characters on the screen fighting each other and everything.
Like, we're literally building up to the airport and a final showdown.
Correct. But his performance is understated, his character is understated, and his motivations are understated, all of which work really well. Killmonger is a character who we can also relate to. He says things that we go, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. And he does things where we just follow what he's saying. It helps that he's being portrayed by a great actor and who understands the character.
Fucking dope, man.
Yeah, and he did a really good job playing the character, and he nailed the performance of what I think Ryan Coogler was intending for that character to represent as well. And that's why he works so well. I mean, it's not a coincidence that a lot of articles now, 2 weeks after the movie's been out, are about Eric Killmonger. And is he the best villain since Loki? Is he the best villain, even including Loki? I mean, that's not a coincidence, because I think he kind of like Black Panther represents the hero that we, you know, a lot of people wanted to see. I think Eric Killmonger represents the villain that a lot of people wanted to see as well.
Yeah. And I mean, had this motherfucker not burned up the heart-shaped herb and choked that woman out in the middle of the fucking, I don't even know what you call it. The cave. Yeah.
The cave.
Yeah. If he doesn't, you know, choke her out on the in the midst of this shit, when he was like, "When I tell you to do some shit, you do some shit," right? Which, you know, I this could be,
but that was a very military top-down leadership style, though. Like, that's.
But I also, you know, think it's
a military cat that went to CIA. That's what he knows to do.
But he's not even CIA. He's a spook. He's special forces. He's even further along down that chain. But there's also something else here that I think and I would love to get Ryan Coogler's influence on this, or just a little, to see if I'm onto something, or if I'm reaching. That inside of the black home, that there are times where the male leadership role takes a little violent turn to make sure that everybody falls in line. Right, wrong, or indifferent. Sometimes that's the way motherfuckers go.
Well, you know, that is a very real, that's a very real circumstance that, you know, has been documented. And we can talk about that being, you know, due to, black men being cut off from leadership in greater society. And so they take harsher leadership in the home. But that's a real thing.
I think there's also the idea that you know, you miss the village bringing you up. You miss being, having a feeling of home, feeling a sense of belonging. So you want everyone to feel as burden or feel the pain that you feel. And I feel like Killmonger, you know, he embodies so much of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
Scott, like when you're talking about somebody like Baron Zemo, I felt like Killmonger is Zemo on 20.
Yes. Yeah.
But his shit is actually legitimately real. He took it too far, but his gripes are real.
Oh yeah. Yep.
No, his gripes are very real. You know, his grievances are real. They're documented. They are unassailable. Yeah. Like, he has real valid points that he is going about. I mean, and, you know, this is something we can talk about. I'm not entirely sure he's going about this the wrong way.
No, he's not.
Frankly.
You know, if you think about the fact that he's talking about arming the underprivileged and the besieged populations of color folks around the globe, why shouldn't we give them the ability to fend for themselves?
Fight back.
Right. Like, it would literally destabilize the entire world. So, yeah, probably not the best course of action.
Yeah, but think about this. If the world is stabilized on the back of oppressed people, should it not be destabilized?
And that right there is the conversation. That is it right there.
Yeah.
I mean, yo, if you build a civilization, a world organization, whatever, on the backs of people, if they decide to shrug, I mean, you could be mad, but should you be mad?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Jesus.
I don't know, man. It's not easy. You know, it's not easy to kind of separate these two things, because Chadwick Boseman is the perfect Black Panther. He gives you the perfect, you know, walk soft, talk soft, carry an incredibly large and heavy black and purple stick.
Well, I mean, we talked about this a little bit. Like, Black Panther in the comics is a bit of a dick. Like, he's a bit imperious for a good reason, but nonetheless, like, Chadwick played him a little soft. I'm reminded of that line, what was it? Mario Van Peebles does a movie, Sweet Back, Sweet, Sweet Song, you know, chronicling his father's filming of that. And when he interviews his father, he said, you know, his father told him, Melvin Van Peebles told him, hey, don't play me too nice. And to that end, I feel like Chadwick played Black Panther a little bit too nice. And that's probably direction and plot in the writers and whatnot. But in the comics, it's good to be noted that Black Panther is much more harsher. He's much more decisive in his movements.
Yeah, but if you think about that, T'Chaka is already that. And
That's true.
You know, we're making a very decisive pivot away from that, because being that has caused, literally, it's brought all of that to the doorstep of Wakanda and the world at large.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, man, you know, you have somebody like Shuri, Letitia Wright, who, and I can't say this enough, there are no small roles. There are no small roles, people. If you come in and you only have 5 lines, but if you fucking kill those 5 lines, it will lead to more lines.
Yep. Yeah.
She was dope. You know, as a little sister, she was dope. For you, Scott, was the... Did you hear anything after What Are Those?
What are those?
Yeah.
I know when she was talking about his sandals.
Yeah. His mandals.
I mean, that's one of the best laughs of the movie. I mean, it's him trying to even defend it too, right after that. You know, it's him instantly just going brother sister talk, and that's the sell. It's just one of those. They go in, and that whole scene. So I remember when he walks in past
a group of people walking out of the lab, and they do the Wakanda Forever. Yep. He does that to them, and they do that, and then he goes in and does it with his sister, and it's just so much more personable, and I don't know, it's that whole scene has the two of them playing off of each other, and the perfect kind of entrance to the rest of what you're seeing is her commenting on his shoes, like, what the fuck is going on there?
Yo, it's crazy, because they do the Wakanda Forever because he's now the king, but it's very clear that he and Shuri have been doing their own version of that for years. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes. And not only that, but can we talk about the fact that this is essentially a DAP?
Yeah,
and
it's the new DAP.
It speaks to the pervasiveness of Black American culture. Like, if you speak to Africans on the continent, they will tell you how pervasive Black American culture is. I mean, you know, rap music takes up, you know, I just heard the statistic a little while ago. Black music, rap, hip-hop, etc., takes up 60% of the music industry worldwide. That's how pervasive we are. And I feel like that little moment where they go into like a very African-American dap and like a little alteration of the Wakanda Forever, that was a nod to that. Like, as much as we African-Americans and Africans have our little schism, there's a very real interconnectedness that cannot be denied.
I think we're looking at that shit backwards. I think that there are African cultural greetings that have played into that. And I think that was just, you know, reinforcing that aspect of culture.
Yep. All right. I'm with that.
I mean, the continent came before we got here. You know what I mean? So, like, we can't be claiming everything as African American. Motherfuckers was doing, it was Black folks in this world long before America was around. So,
oh, this is a real thing. There's Black folks long before anything the fuck else was around.
Here we go. The original man.
Stop it. Don't get on that arm, leg, leg, arm, leg. Don't do it. Arm, leg, leg, arm, ain't.
So, Scott, is there anything? Did you want to talk about your boy Martin Freeman? I can't, you know, obviously he's not your boy, but I have to say, is there anything you want to talk about your boy Martin Freeman?
You know, it's funny. I mean, he's the one character who we talk the least about. You know, I think that makes sense, but it's kind of his performance was great. He fit well within the cast. He was the token white guy. I mean, that, you know what I mean? He fit that bill pretty well. And he's kind of the movie's Phil Coulson. I mean, I see him kind of transitioning into that role, maybe in more than just Black Panther, and his role is more important than what it was here. And he did it, you know, he did it well. He didn't have to do any heavy lifting, but he does good lifting. So
there you go. That was a good way to put that.
That's true. I like that. That's a good one. You know, I think the other aspect is that as a supporting character, he doesn't take away anything from anything else. Obviously, you know, what we saw in Korea with Denai and like seeing the Black Panther in action and then seeing all of the beauty of the way that the Dora Milaje, you know, these motherfuckers was like, yeah, there's seven of us. And there's 1,000 of y'all. Wakabi, yeah, we coming for y'all. Until these rhinos come and start running motherfuckers over, which I thought was really out of place, but I'll allow it. You know, like that sort of shit. I thought that was, I thought that was crazy, but I really enjoyed it.
The rhinos, you mean?
Yeah, the rhinos.
From a military standpoint, I felt. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was just going to say, I actually, I've heard that that's another little thing that people didn't really like about the movie. If you're trying to find something you didn't like about it, or the rhinos in particular, the only reason that they didn't bother me is I actually think rhinos are the coolest animal that has ever lived. So I actually thought that was fucking badass.
I felt like it was a bit of and this is just some like inside baseball shit, but I felt like it was a bit of a misstep because Border Defense is never that fucking strong. like, you know, America, we got the biggest, strongest, baddest military that's ever been on the planet, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's factually true. Come at me with your facts. I'm going to beat you. Like, it is what it is. But we in America, we got the Coast Guard and the National Guard. We ain't got no cybernetically enhanced fucking rhinos. Like, their border defense was way stronger than it should have been. Like, there's no reason
Wakanda why... Wakanda is the single most technologically advanced country in the entire planet. Start over.
Okay. Okay. So if the Coast Guard were to attack like the Navy, Army, or Marines, they would get their asses handed to them. Flat out. And that's what happened in this instance. The Coast Guard attacked the fucking Navy SEALs, which is the Dormagé. And they held them at bay for a while. Would never happen. That's just, it's just factually inaccurate. Won't happen.
Okay. 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 Okay, Mike.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you know, I've been there. I did this shit. You know what I'm saying? I took the oath. I had my salutes. I'm saying, shit's a little off kilter.
We just waiting for those old pictures to surface so we can shade.
You're not gonna see me in no pictures when I'm 50 pounds lighter. Nah, bro. I'm looking like I was 12. It's all good.
I can't wait for the full face, like the clean shaven. I can't wait to see that.
You will never see it.
With the hat on? Yo.
Nah, bro.
With the gold buttons? I need that, cuz.
Kiss my ass. Ain't gonna happen.
Nah, but, you know, I think a lot of folks feel like Killmonger's not dead, right? I feel like he has to be dead because I feel like there's no way Ryan Coogler would devalue the single most important and most effective line of the entire film. Killmonger's on his deathbed. This motherfucker said, you know, bury me at sea because my ancestors knew that death was better than bondage. Come on, man. That shit is hard as fuck.
It's a cold-ass line, but, yo, if they bring him back after the fact, that doesn't devalue what he did. It doesn't.
He told me, I don't want your help because I don't want to be your fucking... I don't want to be inside of a cage for the rest of my life. Let me die. I didn't win. I failed. Fuck that. I'm not going to be your bitch.
Okay, but if you choose death over dishonor, and that's a hard-ass choice. Like, keep it real. A lot of folks would choose to be imprisoned over death. But if you choose to die over being imprisoned, you're going to sign a corpse after the fact. A choice can never be devalued.
Yeah, but look, Killmonger's entire thing...
You showed your character. You showed...
But Killmonger's entire character was based on the premise... that, you know, his ideals were stronger and more impressive than any other thing in this world. He based his entire life on the ideal that he should have lived and was brought up in Wakanda and wasn't. Everything he did led to the moment at the falls. When he broke Zuri, you know, Forrest Whitaker in half, gave him the cut blade. All of that, his entire life after he saw the Wakandan ship fly away, his entire life led to that moment. So you can't say that, you know, this motherfucker lived on his ideals. He's going to die by his ideals.
And he did. He died. If they bring him back, that's not on him.
Scott, like, tell me if I'm wrong. Okay. Scott, tell me from wrong.
Wait, give me a second though. Like, the sacrifice that Bucky made for Captain America, is that devalued by the fact that the Russians got his punk ass, sewed his arm back on and Metal Mesh and all that other shit and brought him back to life?
Completely different. Completely different. Captain Bucky was homies long before any of that shit. Captain Bucky was best friends. Your best friend in the entire world who, if you had half a sandwich and y'all was both starving, you would give him the whole half just to make sure that they lived. That was their relationship. So...
Absolutely.
We doing it. We starting over. Give me somebody else.
I think you both have valid points.
Black America.
I think there's valid points on both sides. I mean, I like the idea that some of these characters that we really like, or some of these important characters that pass early. I actually think that, you know, we don't need to see, if we don't see him again, it gives an opportunity for more to happen. But at the same time, he was such a good character that if he did come back, we would buy that as well, because it's a comic book movie. I mean, at the end of the day, I've been reading comics my whole life. I mean, I don't like that they keep kill and bring these characters back so many damn times, but it's actually one of the story tropes in comic books. Characters die and they come back. So if an enjoyable character dies and comes back, I don't think it devalues what he's done in the past, because we enjoyed the character so much. Why not go see him again? However, I do understand what Damon is saying, that, you know, you like that line so much. I mean, he went out like a boss, and that I could see where you're coming from, but you know, it's a comic movie. If he comes back, what are we going to complain that Michael B. Jordan's back as Killmonger? We just spent an hour talking about this dude. I mean, he was pretty dope. So
he's dope, and I get that, but I just feel like everything in this entire movie was so deliberate. They didn't miss anything, that they wouldn't do that and leave the door open like that. I felt like that was a very definitive final statement to the coup de grace, the last closing of a really great character.
Yeah, and you're not wrong. But I think if there's anything we've learned from these movies, you know, a lot of these one-off villains, you know, we don't need them to come back. But if they did, if we liked them, I don't think it's the end of the world either. So it's kind of one of those, you know, I'm on, if you flip the coin and it lands on its side, I'm all right with that.
Well, look at Magneto versus Charles Xavier.
Yeah, but that's Malcolm X and Martin Luther King.
Well, absolutely. But is look at Killmonger and T'Challa. Are they really that different from Malcolm X and Martin Luther King? Like, really think about it. Could not Killmonger be the Magneto to Chadwick Boseman's Professor X?
And do you know that there's been quite a few comparisons to Killmonger and Magneto in the type of villains they are, because of, you know, Magneto, keep in mind, Magneto is fighting for mutants because of his past as a prisoner.
As a Holocaust survivor, yes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, he was a Holocaust survivor, so a lot of his, why he's so militant as a character, he's, you know, he's kind of misunderstood too. I mean, there's a reason why Magneto is as popular a character as he is, and as good a character as he is. He's got depth that a lot of other villains don't have. I mean, when you think of Ant-Man, do we even think about the Yellow Jacket character?
No.
He's just a throwaway character. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy was a good movie, but is Ronan the Accuser really a good character? He's not. No. He wasn't a good character at all.
Especially because Thanos is in the back of all that shit. But yeah, you're right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these characters, that's another reason why this character is so great. Killmonger he's just got depth that a normal villain doesn't have. Whereas Ulysses Klaue, another great character, we like him because, I mean, Andy Serkis was chewing up scenery and spitting it out.
He's charismatic. Yeah. We like him. He's charismatic. The true test of a good villain is you could look at any good villain and say he is the hero of his own story. You can't say that for Killmonger. You know, he did what he did for his own means, for profit, for whatever, et cetera, et cetera. You could say that for Killmonger. His methods were flawed. You can't say his idea was, because he wasn't. A lot of folks will tell you, like, fuck, Killmonger was right.
Yeah.
That's a debate. So you can't say the cat didn't have a point. Only his methods were flawed.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's wrong, because you're not.
Not even a little bit.
No, that shit is dope.
Think about how different, you look at Wakanda, right? Think about how different the world would be if Wakanda was a real place and they actually intervened on behalf of the oppressed people. Yo, actually, let's just keep it like 100. Let's say they said, fuck all the oppressed people. We're going to look out for the black folks. Look at if it intervened on the behalf of black folks. You know, there's a real black struggle in Russia. You know, they recruited a lot of people to come to the country in the 60s because it was a wedge against America. There's a lot of people there that got abandoned, and there's a lot of real anti-black racism in Russia. There's a lot of fucked up anti-black racism in China and Japan. There's a lot of there's anti-black racism in fucking Africa. Like, think if Wakanda actually intervened in Russia, in Asia, in Africa, in America. What would the world look like? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's Killmonger's point. Can you be mad at that?
I think on face, no. But the other aspect of all this is he wanted to see it burn. You know, at some point he stopped giving a shit about, you know, leveling the playing field. He just wanted to see the whole field burn.
Well, and I get that. And that's a very real pain you feel being a service member. Like, you know, like he went through a system. He got a pretty good college education from what I recall in the little brief synopsis in the movie. Went to the military as an officer, went through special forces, became a spook, which is a very well-worn, like, this isn't far-fetched. This is a very well-worn track for military servicemen. And in that case, did a little too much killing and got warped. This is a real thing. Like, if Wakanda was a real place, if he was a real Wakandan, this is a very natural progression for him to take. I think that's one of the things that makes Killmonger such a compelling villain, because none of what happened is out of whack. Wakanda is a real place, and he's a real Wakandan. This is a very natural track he would have taken.